Division Switzerland, Germany. Chapter 13. The Oligarchs. These victories of the Reformation could not remain unnoticed. Monks, priests, and prelates, in distraction, felt that the ground was everywhere slipping from beneath their feet, and that the Romish Church was on the point of sinking under unprecedented dangers. The oligarchs of the cantons, the advocates of foreign pensions and capitulations, saw that they could delay no longer, if they wished to preserve their privileges. And at the very moment when the church was frightened and beginning to sink, they stretched out their mailed hands to save it. A Stein and a John Hug of Lucerne united with a John Faber, and the civil authority rushed to the support of that hierarchical power which openeth its mouth to blaspheme and mocketh war upon the saints. Their first efforts were directed against Bern. The seven Roman Catholic cantons, in collusion with the Bernese oligarchs, sent a deputation to that city, who laid their complaints before the council on Whitmonday 1526. "All order is destroyed in the church," said the Schulthess, chief magistrate of Lucerne. "God is blasphemed, the sacraments, the Mother of God, and the saints are despised, and imminent and terrible calamities threaten to dissolve our praiseworthy confederation." At the same time, the Bernese partisans of Rome, in harmony with the forest cantons, had summoned to Bern the deputies of the country, chosen from those who were devoted to the papacy. Some of them had the courage to pronounce in favor of the gospel. The sitting was stormy. "Bern must renounce the evangelical faith and walk with us," said the forest cantons. The Bernese councils decreed that they would maintain the ancient Christian faith, the holy sacraments, the Mother of God, the saints, and the ornaments of the churches. Thus Rome triumphed, and the mandate of 1526 was about to annul that of 1523. In effect, all the married priests not born in the canton were compelled to leave it. They drove from their borders all who were suspected of Lutheranism. They exercised a vigilant censorship over every work sold by the booksellers, and certain books were publicly burnt. Even John Faber, with audacious falsehood, said publicly that Haller had bound himself before the council to perform Mass again, and to preach the doctrine of Rome. It was resolved to take advantage of so favorable an opportunity to crush the new faith. For a long while public opinion had been demanding a discussion. This was the only means left of quieting the people. "Convince us by the Holy Scriptures," said the Council of Zurich to the Diet, "and we will comply with your wishes." The Zurichers, it was everywhere said, have made you a promise. If you can convince them by the Bible, why not do so? If you cannot, why do you not conform to the Bible? The conferences held at Zurich had exercised an immense influence, and it was felt necessary to oppose them by a conference held in a Romish city, with all necessary precautions to secure the victory to the Pope's party. True, these discussions had been pronounced unlawful, but means were found to evade this difficulty. "It is only intended," said they, "to check and condemn the pestilent doctrines of Zwingli." This being settled, they looked about for a vigorous champion, and Dr. Eck offered himself. He feared nothing. "Zwingli no doubt has milked more cows than he has read books," said he, by Hofmeister's account. The great council of Zurich sent Dr. Eck a safe conduct to go direct to Zurich, but Eck replied that he would wait for the answer of the Confederation. Zwingli then offered to dispute at St. Gall or Schaffhausen, but the council, acting on an article of the Federal Compact, which provided that every accused person should be tried in the place of his abode, ordered Zwingli to withdraw his offer. At last the Diet fixed that the conference should take place at Baden on the 16th of May 1526. This meeting promised to be important, for it was the result and the seal of the alliance which had just been concluded between the clergy and the oligarchs of the Confederation. "See," said Zwingli to Vadian, "what Faber and the oligarchs now venture to attempt." Accordingly, the decision of the Diet produced a great sensation in Switzerland. It was not doubted that a conference held under such auspices would be favorable to the Reformation. "Are not the five cantons the most devoted to the Pope Supreme in Baden?" said the Zurichers. "Have they not already declared Zwingli's doctrine heretical, and pursued it with fire and sword? Was not Zwingli burned in effigy at Lucerne, with every mark of ignominy? At Friburg, were not his writings committed to the flames? Do they not everywhere call for his death? Have not the cantons that exercise sovereign rights in Baden declared that in whatever part of their territory Zwingli made his appearance, he should be apprehended? Did not Oberlinger, one of their chiefs, say that the only thing in the world that he desired was to hand Zwingli, though he should be called a hangman all the rest of his days? And has not Dr. Eck himself, for years past, been crying out that the heretics must be attacked with fire and sword? What then will be the end of this conference? What other result can it have but the death of the reformer? Such were the fears that agitated the commission appointed at Zurich to examine into the affair. Zwingle, an eyewitness of their agitation, rose and said, "You know what happened at Baden to the valiant men of Stamheim, and how the blood of the worst dyed the scaffold, and it is to the very place of their execution that they challenge us. Let Zurich, Bern, St. Gall, or even Ball, Constance, and Schaffhausen be selected for the conference. Let it be agreed to discuss essential points only, employing nothing else than the word of God. Let no judge be set above it, and then I am ready to appear." Meanwhile, fanaticism was already bestirring itself and striking down its victims. A consistory, headed by that same Faber who had challenged Zwingle, on the 10th of May 1526, about a week before the discussion at Baden, condemned to the flames, as a heretic, an evangelical minister named John Hugel, pastor of Lindau, who walked to the place of execution singing the Te Deum. At the same time, another minister, Peter Spengler, was drowned at Friburg by order of the Bishop of Constance. Sinister rumors reached Zwingle from all quarters. His brother-in-law, Leonard Tremp, wrote to him from Bern, "I entreat you, as you regard your life, not to repair to Baden. I know that they will not respect your safe conduct." It was affirmed that a plan had been formed to seize and gag him, throw him into a boat, and carry him off to some secret place. With these threats and persecutions before them, the Council of Zurich decreed that Zwingle should not go to Baden. The discussion being fixed for the 19th of May, the disputants and the representatives of the cantons and bishops began to arrive gradually. On the side of he Roman Catholics appeared in the foremost place the warlike and vainglorious Dr. Eck. On the side of the Protestants, the retiring and gentle Ecolampadius. The latter was well aware of the perils attending this discussion. He had long hesitated, like a timid stag worried by furious dogs. Says an old historian, at length he decided on going to Baden, previously making this solemn declaration, "I acknowledge no other standard of judgment than the word of God." At first, he had earnestly desired that Zwingle should share his danger, but he soon became convinced that, if the intrepid doctor had appeared in that fanatical city, the anger of the Romanists, kindling at his sight, would have caused the death of both of them. They began by determining the regulations of the conference. Dr. Eck proposed that the deputies of the forest cantons should be empowered to pronounce the final judgment, which was, in truth, anticipating the condemnation of the Reformed doctrines. Thomas Plater, who had come from Zurich to attend the colloquy, was dispatched by Ecolampadius to ask Zwingle's advice. Arriving during the night, he was with difficulty admitted into the reformer's house. "Unlucky disturber," said Zwingle to him, as he rubbed his eyes. "For 6 weeks I have not gone to bed, owing to this discussion." "What are your tidings?" Plater stated Eck's demands. "And who can make those peasants understand such things?" replied Zwingle. "They would be much more at home in milking their cows." On the 21st of May the conference opened. Eckenfaber, accompanied by prelates, magistrates, and doctors, robed in garments of damask and silk, and adorned with rings, chains, and crosses, repaired to the church. Eck haughtily ascended a pulpit splendidly decorated, while the humble Ecolampadius, meanly clothed, was forced to take his seat in front of his opponent on a rudely carved stool. "All the time the conference lasted," said the chronicler Bullinger, "Eck and his friends were lodged at the Baden parsonage, faring sumptuously, living gaily and scandalously, and drinking much wine, with which the abbot of Wettingen provided them. Eck took the baths at Baden, it was said, but in wine. The evangelicals, on the contrary, made a sorry appearance, and the people laughed at them as at a troop of mendicants. Their way of living was in strong contrast to that of the papal champions. The landlord of the Pike, the inn at which Ecolampadius lodged, being curious to know what the latter did in his room, reported that every time he peeped in, he found him reading or praying. 'It must be confessed,' said he, 'that he is a very pious heretic.' The disputation lasted 18 days, and during the whole time the clergy walked daily in solemn procession, chanting litanies in order to ensure victory. Eck alone spoke in defense of the Romish doctrines. He was still the champion of the Leipzig disputation, with the same German accent, broad shoulders, and strong lungs, an excellent town crier, and in outward appearance having more resemblance to a butcher than a theologian. According to his usual custom, he disputed with great violence, seeking to gall his adversaries by sarcasm, and from time to time slipping out an oath. But the president never called him to order. X stamps with his feet, and thumps with his hands, he blusters, he swears, and he scolds. Whatever the Pope and the cardinals teach, is the faith, he declares, that he holds. Ecolampadius, on the contrary, with his calm features and noble and patriarchal air, spoke with so much mildness, and at the same time with such courage and ability, that even his adversaries, affected and impressed, said one to another, "Oh, that the tall sallow man were on our side!" At times, however, he was moved when he saw the hatred and violence of his auditors. "How impatiently they listen to me," said he. "But God will not forsake his glory, and that is all we seek." Ecolampadius, having combated Dr. X's first thesis on the real presence, Haller, who had come to Baden after the opening of the conference, entered the lists against the second. But little used to such conferences, of a timid character, tied down by the orders of his government, and embarrassed by the looks of his envoy Gaspard of 1050 Mullinen, a great enemy to the Reformation, Haller possessed not the haughty confidence of his opponent, but he had more real strength. When Haller had finished, Ecolampadius returned to the combat, and pressed X so closely, that the latter was compelled to fall back on the customs of the church. "Custom," replied Ecolampadius, "has no force in our Switzerland, unless it be according to the constitution. Now, in matters of faith, the Bible is our constitution." The third thesis on the invocation of saints, the fourth on images, the fifth on purgatory, were successively discussed. No one rose to contest the truth of the two last, which turned on original sin and baptism. Zwingli took an active part in the whole of the discussion. The Romish party, which had appointed four secretaries, had forbidden all other persons to take notes under pain of death. But Jerome Walsh, a student from the Valley, who possessed an excellent memory, impressed on his mind all that he heard, and on returning home, hastened to commit it to writing. Thomas Plater and Zimmerman of Winterthur carried these notes to Zwingli every day, with letters from Ecolampadius, and brought back the reformer's answers. Soldiers armed with halberds were posted at all the gates of Baden, and it was only by inventing different excuses that these two messengers evaded the inquiries of the sentinels, who could not understand why they were so frequently passing to and fro. Thus Zwingli, though absent from Baden in body, was present in spirit. He advised and strengthened his friends, and refuted his adversaries. "Zwingli," said Oswald Myconius, "has labored more by his meditations, his sleepless nights, and the advice which he transmitted to Baden, than he would have done by discussing in person in the midst of his enemies." During the whole conference, the Roman Catholics were in commotion, sending letters in every direction and loudly boasting of their victory. "Ecolampadius," exclaimed they, "vanquished by Dr. Eck and laid prostrate in the lists, has sung his recantation. The dominion of the Pope will be everywhere restored." These statements were circulated through the cantons, and the people, prompt to believe everything they hear, gave credit to all the vaunts of the Romish partisans. When the dispute was finished, the monk Murner of Lucerne, nicknamed the Tomcat, stepped forward and read 40 charges against Zwingli. "I thought," said he, "that the coward would come and reply to them, but he has not appeared. Well then, by every law, both human and divine, I declare 40 times that the tyrant of Zurich and all his partisans are traitors, liars, perjurers, adulterers, infidels, robbers, sacrilegers, gallows birds, and such that every honest man must blush at having any intercourse whatever with them." Such was the abuse which at this time was honored with the name of Christian controversy by doctors whom the Romish Church should herself disavow. Great agitation prevailed in Baden. The general impression was that the Roman champions had talked the loudest, but argued the weakest. Only Ecolampadius and 10 of his friends voted against X theses, while 80 persons, including the presidents of the debate and all the monks of Wittingen, adopted them. Haller had quitted Baden before the end of the conference. The majority of the diet then decreed that, as Zwingli, the chief of this pestilent doctrine, had refused to appear, and as the ministers who had come to Baden had resisted all conviction, they were altogether cast out from the bosom of the Catholic Church.